Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hour number two, coming live for the Tinky and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. On this Thursday around the country, 3 hours every single day. Tinky and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. On Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, in case you want to hit him up, wish him well in his celebrity softball game tonight over at Yankee Stadium, at Brandon Tierney, want to get at me, anything I said, whatever. You know, we talked about this during the break here, and Brandel Chambly, who is as brilliant, breaking down the technical aspects of the golf swing, maybe as anybody in the history of my golf commentating. He is superb. And while he does that, he ruffles a lot of feathers, which is what makes him really interesting. He's not afraid to tick a few people off. So Brandel's going to call me in about 20 minutes from Bethpage as the PGA Championship's underway. You know, and I wanted to say this, like, I'm not going to shove Tiger Woods down your throat. I'm not going to do that. He didn't play well today. He was all over the map, comes out, drops a double bogey on the first hole, had another double bogey in his front nine. Got a little hot early on the back nine for him. Had an eagle mixed in there. I think it was bird, par, eagle. Then he, you know, stumbled again on the back with a couple of bogeys. So Tiger's not the story today. What's becoming the story, and we were talking about this during the break, and I'm curious where this goes the rest of the season, because you're going to need a little more evidence before you say this with great conviction, but there's enough evidence to at least present this to you. And, you know, you look about the run, or pardon me, you look at the run that Tiger Woods had, the run that propelled him to the top of the sporting landscape, encompassing every sport. There was Tiger, it was everybody else, you know. There was a point he even eclipsed Jordan. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was just a different energy. It was this cultish. It was just so different. We had never seen this. It was a sport. I joked with Teek the other day. I said, for a while, you know, the only debate was, guys going to wear light khakis or dark khakis? I mean, what kind of pants are they going to wear to tuck their bellies into to play, you know, at the U.S. Open, whatever. I mean, yeah, and then Tiger came, and he looks like a wide receiver walking up and down the fairways with his shoulders back, and he's all jacked up, and he's crushing the ball. We know what Tiger did. And then he just slayed courses. They start to try to Tiger-proof him, and they tried to modify them in a way that, at least in theory, gave not so much Tiger's peers a chance to compete with him, because there was nothing. I mean, the only way they could have accomplished that is if when they announced, you know, from Florida or the for Tiger Woods, and they're like, all right, Tiger, you're starting the round of plus three. Everybody else is level par, but because you're so good, we're going to give you three bogeys. You haven't hit a shot yet, but you're three over par. And eventually, when it's all said and done, you'll be 13 under par, but just to make it interesting, you're plus three to start. They didn't Tiger-proof the courses to give Tiger's peers a better chance to hang with him. They Tiger-proofed the courses to give the golfing record books a chance to sustain themselves, because he was obliterating everything. And now you start to look at what Brooks Koepka's doing. Now, if Brooks Koepka comes out tomorrow, and he'll be late in the afternoon, he'll be one something, I believe. He went out early today. He'll be late in the afternoon, which means the ground should be a little drier even more and a little tougher. I don't know that they'll trim the rough tonight, so you might even get a little bit more growth there. It's going to be trickier, probably tighten up or flatten out the greens a little bit more on the stimp, maybe tuck the pins in a tough spot, tougher. If Brooks comes out and throws up today, you know, 63 today, and he goes 74 tomorrow, which he's not, then this conversation's kind of a waste of time. But if Brooks, think about it. What if Brooks Koepka goes wire to wire? And right now, if I'm betting heavy money that he is. I don't see enough long hitters in the mix that will be able to chase him down over the next couple of days. That's just my opinion. And maybe Brandon will disagree, and if so, we'll get some interesting banter with that coming up next year on Tiki and Tierney. But what if Brooke shoots, and I want to reference this because I believe it's very important. It gives you great perspective. So in 2000, I was not at this U.S., even though I'm from here, I was not at the 2002 U.S. Open. I was working and living in Detroit. And that was when they were all over, crazy New Yorkers were all over Sergio with the waggles. Tiger won that at Bethpage. He shot -3. Just a little perspective. -3 on this course. -3. Tiger in 2002. In 2009, Lucas Glover, all right, certainly nowhere near Tiger or Brooks Koepka, shot a -4. 276, 277. Right now, I mean, Brooks Koepka, if he even remotely replicates what he did today, is going to shoot like 261. It's going to be ridiculous. And I submit there's no way he's going to be able to do that on this course. But what if he does? What if he slays the unslayable? And what if Brooks, and I know he doesn't emit a ton of personality. You know, he very sedate in his mannerisms on the court. Even when he eagles or holes out, I mean, you barely see any emotion. But what happens if he does that this weekend? And you start to see this continuation of what he's been doing now at the majors for a while. Brooks Koepka might be the first, this is where it gets interesting, might be the first person since Tiger to be able to sustain this level of play since Tiger. You had David Duval do it for a little bit. A lot of people forget David Duval was the world number one. And then he had some back issues. He had some depth perception issues and he gained some weight. He lost his game. But he signed the mega contract with Nike and then he just lost his swing. And, he's a broadcaster now. We've had him on the show. Still plays a little bit because he's got some exemptions, but his game is pretty much vanished, unfortunately. And then there was like Vijay Singh for a moment. And obviously Phil doing his thing, right? But if you look at this century of golfers, those who have taken aim at the throne of long-term sustained dominance, Rory flirted with it, lost it. Jordan Spieth came out of the chute flying, lost it. Dustin Johnson, we were waiting and waiting, and he grounded the club. What was that, 2014, I want to say? I think that was at Valhalla when Rory McIlroy shot -16 in 2014. I'm pretty sure that was I could be wrong, but I think that's it. And that was the start of Dustin. And we're like, wow, this guy might be the next guy if he can curtail his drinking and some other issues and get his act together. And thankfully he has. And then he three-jacked the Chambers Bay and Jason Day won that, right? He left a major on the table. And then he got his act together and won a couple majors. But Dustin Johnson hasn't quite been the same since that little run at dominance. Brooks Koepka appears to be the one guy capable of sustaining it. And to come, this is coming from a hack, so take it what it's worth, but to shoot a 63 on that course today, I'm trying to think of an equivalent for somebody like non-golf fans. What is the equivalent? The degree of difficulty at that course, at a major, 63? I mean, loosely translated, that would be like scoring, I'll say, 70 or 75 points in an NBA game, okay? Or DeSell just said no-hitter. No, no-hitter, far more common. No, I was not. That, I was thinking like 5 home runs in a game, certainly 4 home runs in a game. I was thinking maybe 5. Maybe back-to-back no-hitters. That would be like if you're a goalie in hockey ripping off, I'd say 7 or 8 straight shutouts. Like, it is just, it's inconceivable to think what he's done to this course. And while we're all thrilled, and I told you Tiger Woods would win a major, I looked into that camera, I said it into this microphone, when he first went back to his tournament in the Bahamas that he hosts, the no-cut event with 18 golfers, and I started to look at his ball speed and his swing speed. I said, he's healthy. Now, if he could get his slot and all the stuff that real golfers can talk about that I won't waste your time on, if he could get back to that and his feel, Tiger Woods is going to win a major. But this isn't about you know, Tiger this weekend. Tiger's going to blend into the woodwork. This is about a guy who is on the precipice of doing something. Number one, nobody saw coming. And number two, he could control for a while. Now, the only concern, like if I'm the PGA Tour and I'm in the headquarters right now and I'm plotting out, I'm like, not that I would say this publicly because you would never diss a great player. But if I'm sitting there, I'm saying, man, you know, boy, Brooks is great, but would he sell? Do you flip on the tube to watch Brooks Koepka? I'm the wrong guy to ask because, as the joke goes, I'll flip on a European event to try to learn something about golf. So I'm the wrong guy to ask here. But, I mean, D-Cell, you're a fringe golf guy. Santa, you're a fringe golf guy. That might even be, like, that might be giving you more credit than you deserve, with all due respect. I know you're tuning in to watch Tiger. Are you going to tune in to watch Brooks Koepka?
I don't know that I would, judging by just in the break. I was asking you questions about Brooks. I don't feel like I know a lot about Brooks, the person.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot about Tiger until it came out about his personal life. Sure. I don't necessarily need to, but I don't really know a lot about Brooks.
But early with Tiger, you didn't need to know a lot about him because, number, his ethnicity, just it pulled you in. The rareness of that, you know, the barriers that he was just slaying for so many people and the cross he was carrying there. And by the way, then the excitement on the course, like that was, you got to remember, you know, some of these guys now, they've got some energy, you know, Sergio's got some energy and some of these young guys have some energy. When Tiger Woods was doing that, you know, you got to remember that there were guys on that golf course when he comes up at 97, there's guys playing those events that came up in the early 80s that are looking around saying, and I don't mean this is a race thing, although I'm sure that was, let's not be naive, of course that was a problem for some. But they're looking at this guy saying, now who the hell does this kid think he is? We don't do that in golf. That's not how we celebrate a birdie. We just move on to the next tee box and we tip our cap. But that's boring.
But that seems to be what Brooks is more from.
No, that's what I'm saying. So Brooks is a tough package because he crushes the ball, but there's other guys who crush the ball. Now, he might crush it the furthest. You know, his best drive versus Rory's best drive versus DJ's best drive versus Rahm's best drive versus maybe one or two others' best drive. It's negligible. I mean, it might be 2-3 yards in either direction. I mean, Brooks Koepka could smash it 370 if he catches it on the screws with a little downwind. But does that really pull you in the way it did when Tiger was long? Because Tiger was long and nobody else was. There are other guys who hit it as far as Brooks Koepka does. So he doesn't have that advantage. It's not like you're intrigued just by his sheer length. So it's like, okay, now he's got to pull you in another way. Is he jubilant? Is he unpredictably excitable on the golf course? No. I mean, he's stoic. You don't know if he's shooting an 81 or if he's going to shoot or shooting a 63 and breaking the course record, establishing the course record, which, by the way, he did today. But I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter when you flirt with history. Maybe that's the attraction with Brooks Koepka. Maybe that's the main attraction. You know, to piece this all together here, and I'll throw this by my buddy Brandel Chambly coming up next. I mean, you think I know golf. I know nothing compared to this guy. He'll set me in motion if I need it. He'll check me. But I think I laid this out in a very smart way, in a very unique way, because the other guys... Not that Rory's not going to win again. Of course he will. Jason Day hasn't won in 13 months, and we're rooting for Jason. We love him. Had him on the show 2 weeks ago. Great guy. Awesome guy. One of my favorite golfers on tour. Great guy. Jason's going to win again, and Spieth is going to win. These guys will win again. But Koepka's, it's like he's off the conveyor belt. He's off the conveyor belt from the golfing factory. You know, like you, and as you literally hit that conveyor belt, it's like power, size, touch, you know, green work, bunker play, controlled mind, you know, slow heartbeat. He got banged with every part of the conveyor belt. I don't know that there's a weakness in his game. So we'll talk about this coming up with Brandel. Is he the next guy? Maybe he's trying to do what nobody could do since Tiger Woods did it, and that is just dominate the game for a long time. 855-212-4227. Tiki and Tierney, my guy Brandel Chambly dropping some knowledge from Bethpage next right here on Tiki and Tierney. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news, quick way to save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. So day one at Bethpage, which is 30-something miles from where our studio is here, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network on the simulcast. And I love my next guest. I think he's a brilliant golf mind. He's a man of his word because when he lost a bet to me, he paid me up in studio. It was only a dollar. I mean, this guy, I should have bet him a lot more than a dollar. He makes good money, but it was more about the symbolism. I wanted him to hand it to me rather than me hand it to him. He's a great follow on Twitter, on social media, and he always has something poignant to say. If you don't like it, he doesn't care, which you know I love. Brandel Chambly from the Golf Channel. Brandon, what's happening, buddy? Welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Well, hell, it's nice to talk to you. What a day this was, huh?
Listen, you have to start with the 63. I was trying to put this into terms of accomplishments for, like, other sports for the non-golf fan, and I said it's kind of like scoring 70 or 75 points in an NBA game. Can you verbalize, can you really just illuminate the difficulty to shoot a 63 on this course today? What exactly did Brooks Koepka do?
Well, outside of, say, a Sunday round with championship pressure, I've been racking my brain since he finished to try to come up with a better round of golf that I have ever seen. Now, of course, there's been lower scores. No question about it. There's been a bigger differential between what someone shot and the tour average. But when you think about the situation, the fact that it's a major, the fact that it's on Bethpage Black, which is notoriously difficult, the fact that he was in Tiger Woods' company, to put that further into perspective, Tiger Woods has won, prior to the Masters, he had won 14 major championships. In the very next event that he played in, the average position of the people that he played with was 38 after the first round.
Okay.
And he was getting paired with gods. He was getting paired with Phil Mickelson and BJ Singh and Nick Price and Tom. He was getting paired with major championship winners.
Mm-hmm.
No one had ever finished a round with Tiger Woods with the lead. And I've said it before. Tiger Woods has seen more bad golf than anyone in history. He intimidates people. The maelstrom of his circle diminishes people. And I dare say that is the best golf that Tiger Woods, that he didn't author, is the best golf that he has ever seen.
Wow.
That's how impressed I was with what Brooks Koepka did today.
Okay, so that's great perspective. And let me ask you this, just in a general flyby scouting report, we know that Brooks Koepka is an absolute masher. His length is a great asset. What do you think is his second best characteristic? Is it a slow heartbeat? I'm trying to figure out number two. What's his second best trait?
Well, slow heartbeat's right up there. I mean, I do think that there's something about great athletes where they move slower. Certainly it's true about Tiger Woods. I think that's strategic. I think Tiger Woods learned very early on that there was a correlation between the amount of steps he takes and his heartbeat. And I think that's part of Tiger Woods' secret, is that he's always kept in sort of the right, even keel. Brooks Koepka very much has that same cadence. He's unflappable, but he appears to be unflappable. But today, what was amazing about his round was it was so strategic. He kept it beneath the hole on almost every single iron shot. And again, back to the Tiger Woods. After Tiger Woods made eagle at the fourth hole, he stood up and just ripped it at five, and Brooks hit it 20 yards past him. On three, when Tiger Woods hit a great shot in there, Brooks got up next and hit it right beside him, and then Brooks made it before Tiger did. So he had an answer to everything. So perhaps you're right. Perhaps it's just the low heartbeat, which is another way of saying he's impervious to pressure.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Brandel Chambly from the Golf Channel here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So in terms of the raucous meter, I know they're not getting on anybody like they got on Sergio back in 2002, but how's the gallery out there at Bethpage? Always a side story. How was it today?
It's kind of sober right now. I'm thinking before the week gets out. You know, part of that in 2002 was it was Tiger Woods. If Tiger Woods was doing today or did do today what Brooks Koepka did, then this place would be, well, it would be like Times Square on New Year's Eve. But Brooks moves along, and he's not very demonstrative. Even when he made the putt at the last hole for 63. He sort of gave it a mild air punch as if he had just shot, 69 or 70 in a regular tour event. But what he did was just grab a piece of history. They've been playing major championships since 1860. He became the ninth person to shoot 63. in the first round of a major championship. The previous eight, just to give you some sort of perspective of how hard it is to follow a great round with another one,
yeah,
averaged 72.5 in their next round.
Who was the last one? Was it somebody somewhat modern? It's got to be, right?
Well, 2016, Phil Mickelson shot 63 in the first round of the Open Championship. Now, he should have gone on to win, and he would have won if they've had 500 majors. He would have won 499 of them because Henrik Stenson shot the lowest score in the history of major championships. So he didn't go on to win. And only two of them that had shot 63 in the first round of a major have gone on to win. Jack Nicklaus shot 63 in the first round, 1980 U.S. Open. He went on to win.
Okay.
Ray Foy shot 63 in the first round of the PGA in 1982, and he went on to win. But it hasn't been a sure bet, that's for sure.
Yeah, nobody knows golf history like this guy. You know, Brandel, I've always curious, you know, and the cameras, and of course it's on CBS this weekend, which is great for us. We'll get Saturday, Sunday coverage on CBS. But really, all the networks do a nice job of bringing us into the by-play, the caddy-player relationship. We get a chance to hear the sequence and, you know, the dissecting, where's the hole, what club, the wind, and, you know, everybody's different. I think it's really fun to hear which players give the caddy the latitude to, I don't want to say put them in their place, but really express themselves and which don't. But when you're going for a course record, all right, when you're on the precipice of doing something that nobody's done before, is Brooks's caddy telling them that? Like, is that part of the conversation or is that unspoken?
That'd be unspoken. You know, they wouldn't talk about what he was doing unless it were, close to the finish line. And the shot that you were hitting, the strategy was dependent upon your position in the event. You might need to take more chances or take less risk.
Yeah.
But that would happen late on Saturday or it would happen on Sunday. It wouldn't be a typical Thursday sort of thing. But it's hard to know. You don't want to say anything that would get your player out of the rhythm or the zone, if you want to call it that. But it's basically a beautiful moment when you see an athlete where they forget what they're shooting and they just literally go from idea to action with such ease. That's the thing about Brooks that is amazing, to see him go from the thought process to the execution is beautiful. Not many do it without much fidgeting. You know, it's one of the prettiest things of Tiger Woods is how he gets into a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of regrips, not a lot of waggles, not a lot of fidgeting of his feet. He's very authoritative about the way he goes to his work, and so is Brooks Koepka.
Basically the exact opposite of me, who's doing 1,000 things, hoping the ball goes straight and goes in the air.
Hey, listen, they're exact opposite of almost everybody who plays the tour because they're fighting demons somewhere in there, and they're
thinking
about all these things.
Oh,
and,
man.
And that manifests itself in little ticks here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally hear and feel what you're saying. Talking to Brandel Chambly, my buddy, giving us a call from Bethpage. He's out there in Long Island. All right, so let me get on you for this, though. So the glowing platitudes in which you speak of Brooks Koepka, and obviously he's earned the praise. Why, when you were asked recently, you said that only DJ and Rory would be able to challenge Tiger's stronghold on the game? It seems like,
what happened? Nothing's etched in stone. I mean, he may go on to be a better player than he has proven to be. And people will say, well, that's ridiculous. He's won 3 major championships. And he has. I'm not discounting those. I've said he was an amazing player before he ever won a major championship. But after he won the 3 majors, I'm asked the question, does he have the best mind in the game of golf? Is he the best player on the landscape? And I simply wasn't willing to cede that ground to him based upon, in my view, wins on 3 golf courses that were very, very easy off of the tee, where it was mostly about power and not about strategy.
Yep.
And not about nuance. He's been on the tour for 5 years, and the best he's ever finished in scoring average on the PGA Tour is 9th. Now, that's good, but Dustin Johnson has won the Vardon Trophy twice. Rory McIlroy's won the Vardon Trophy twice. Their statistics, the composite pieces of their game. Now, look, it may very well be that Brooks just simply is better than all of the composite pieces, right? He just may have such incredible intangibles that you can't sum him up in statistics.
Mm-hmm.
But never has he driven the ball as well as Dustin or Rory. Never has he had iron shots consistently as well as Dustin or Rory. Never has he scrambled as well as them. And with the exception of one year, he's never putted as well as them. So you start to look at they are who they are. I mean, look, VJ is about to crack into triple digits, holding the number one world ranking. Only two other men have done that, Norman and Tiger Woods. So VJ and Rory are, you know, in my view, they're straight to the Hall of Fame without a question.
Yeah.
But Brooks is amazing. Look, I've been flipped off a few times in my life, not as much as most people think, but I felt like he was giving me the finger for 4.5 hours today. And it was beautiful.
Yeah, I hear you.
Nobody outside of Brooks's immediate family probably enjoyed the round of golf that Brooks shot today more than me. I loved it. It's what I wanted to see. I just said I want to see how good he is.
I hear you.
I want to see him play a golf course where it's difficult to hit the fairway.
That's right.
And you have to be very precise with your irons, and you can't get away with anything. And look, through one round, all I would say is I guess he showed me, didn't he?
He did. So far, he has. And Brando, I got one more thing for you. Brando Chambly, really kind enough carving out some time. I know you're running all over the place with the TV, the Golf Channel, of course. Great analyst. Must follow on Twitter. Absolute must follow. Real quick, what was your predicted winning score before the event, and how have you recalibrated that since the 63 by Koepka?
I didn't think anybody was going to get any better than 5 under par. I just couldn't see it.
Uh-huh.
Would I come off that? It's supposed to rain a little bit over the next 3 days. But look, I still think the winning score will be 6 under par, even now after this. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brooks has got a lot of work cut out for him in front of him. But, you know, the last time I looked, Rory wasn't playing that well. Tiger Woods is 2 over par. Molinari shot 2 over par.
Yep.
So some of the biggest, most dependable names seem to be struggling at the moment. So, you know, right now, I think 6 under par wins.
Yeah. And that's why I thought it was imperative that, and you mentioned a lot of those guys, the two power groups that went out late today, and Phil's in there, and Day, and all those guys. I thought it was imperative that one of those players, you know, dropped a really good number out there, not a 63, but 67, 68, somewhere in the neighborhood of Brooks, because with the length of the course, if Brooks Koepka has, you know, 3, 4, 5 shot advantage, 80% of the field just doesn't hit it far enough to try to make up the distance, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, there's some lesser stars where you start to look and you think, well, we don't know how good they are either. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood shot 67 today. I mean, Fleetwood finished second the last time we were here in New York playing in a major championship. So maybe he's the one that provides the challenge. You know, Brooks has had 4 previous first-round leads on the PGA Tour. He's never converted either of them. So this is new ground for Brooks Koepka as well, leading wire-to-wire in a major championship. Again, you add you build your reputation, your legend in the game of golf, brick by brick. But to some extent, he built the whole floor today, Brooks did. At least for me, he did. You know, watching him play in Tiger's Company and what he did.
Yep.
Now, can he build on that lead and go on and win by a wide margin? I mean, then you're taking the legend to a completely different level, at least in my eyes.
Yep.
Plenty of people say he's already won 3. What more do you need? Well, 3 elevates him to superstar status, no question about it. But when we get there, we start delineating based upon different criteria. Do they blow away fields? Because it is the breakaway win that foretells dominance. Anytime someone wins by 1 or 2, luck is involved to some extent, a bounce here or there. But when somebody can win by 10 shots, 8 shots, that foretells dominance. Nothing else does to the extent of breakaway wins. I'd like to see that from Brooks.
What a vivid description of not just the event, but the game of golf, as we expected. That's why we love Brando. Brando, thanks a lot for carving out the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Always my pleasure. Love talking to you guys.
You're
thanks
the man.
So much.
You got it, buddy. Brando Chambly, buddy from the Golf Channel. Must follow on Twitter. All right, coming up, we'll get to football of the 40s. Patrick Peterson on ice, 6 games suspended. Should the Cards trade him now? Or should they wait? We'll get to that after Axe Update, which is right now. Okay, Tiki, it's here at CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, back here on a Thursday. I'm going to get to football at the 40s in a moment. Next hour, Antonio Daniels, who's always terrific on the NBA, great energy, great perspective, not afraid to let it rip, which is why we like him here on Tiki and Tierney. You know, listen, you want to be responsible with this stuff, seeing a lot, and this goes back to this morning, but it's obviously changing and fluctuating as the day goes on, but seeing a lot of stuff about the great Ric Flair, you know, you never want to be in a race to, you know, try to just get it out there first. I don't know. I'm seeing conflicting things with Rick, that he's still fighting and some that he may have lost his battle. So we're keeping an eye on this, and God forbid if something happens today, we'll kind of blow up the rest of the show and we'll finish up with Ric Flair. And, you know, if it's tomorrow, or just pray that he rallies. He doesn't seem like he's in a very, very good space right now. And when it first broke, it seemed very dire. You could tell right away, if not that there aren't medical miracles, of course there are, but you just got the sense early when you first started to see this get traction on social media that it was very daunting. His biggest battle for sure. So hopefully Rick is still punching away and still fighting, and we'll keep an eye on that. Right now, football at the 40s. Let's go.
40-yard kick right hash mark.
40 yards on the return.
A 40-yard touchdown.
40 yards.
You love football. We love football. So we give you football every day. It's football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, Mike's going to tee it up. Go ahead, Santer. Second time to shine today, brother. What you got?
Now, this happened right before the show. We heard all the rumblings during the offseason about Patrick Peterson being upset with the Cardinals, wanting out. Well, it turns out that he is being suspended 6 games for PEDs. The interesting thing is that Peterson wanted the Cardinals to restructure his contract when they first found out about this weeks ago. The team said no, and now we know why, and I think he's upset with the team for not restructuring his deal that would have impacted his suspension differently. Mm-hmm. And this is why he was upset with the front office, because they would not restructure his deal weeks ago when they knew he was going to get suspended. It seems like Patrick Peterson is, I don't know, overplaying his hand here a little bit.
Doesn't seem like he's got a ton of leverage here is what we're saying. Yeah, this surprised me. You know, I guess you could never be stunned in today's sports world, but you know, Patrick Peterson's been, I mean, I think he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, Patrick Peterson's been a great player every year, Pro Bowl. I know there's a big difference between Pro Bowl and All-Pro, you know, but specific to the situation now, you know, where he is in his career, he's 29, he's got a little mileage. The Cardinals are miles away from winning. Last year they were 32nd in points per game. You know, most of the pertinent stats, both offensively and defensively, they just weren't very good. But here's a guy who's played 8 seasons, and he's been brilliant. I mean, almost 15 picks, and at times, big chunks of his career are shutdown corner, as much as you can be a shutdown corner in today's NFL, given the rules here. So, you know, the 6-game suspension, you got to look at it two ways. You know, what is his value to the Cardinals right now? I would suggest that it's relatively minimal. What is his value to a team like, oh, I don't know, the Steelers? Or a team that maybe is a secondary star away from being, you know, really, truly in the mix to win a Super Bowl, I would think the value is very high. It's high because he's very good. And, you know, once that 6-game suspension expires, you would think if Patrick Peterson keeps himself in anything that represents decent shape, you got a star coming back who is feeling fresh while everybody else is pretty gassed as you start to get to mid and late October. So he's going to be traded, I would believe, and we'll see who's got the moves to make it happen. Whoever gets him, it's going to be a big win. He's good.
The New York Jets finally traded 2016 first-round pick Darren Lee to the Chiefs for a 6th-rounder.
Mm-hmm.
So both sides of the equation. The Jets giving up Lee for a 6th-rounder the day after getting rid of their GM.
Yep.
And also the Chiefs. They've added Tyron Matthew, they've added Darren Lee, they've added Frank Clark.
Lost D Ford.
So they're obviously having some issues on the offensive side, but looks like they're kind of rebuilding that defense. So let's look at it from both sides, Jets and Chiefs.
Well, first of all, from Jets' point of view, Darren Lee just wasn't what he was supposed to be when they drafted him in 2016 here. He's not the guy. He's better in coverage. If you actually look at his advanced numbers from Pro Football Focus and these numbers, you know, the sites that really dissect this, he's very thin. He's just a thin player. He's very light in the behind, for lack of a better description. So he gets pushed around on the run. He can't disengage, can't shed blockers. But when he drops back, you know, whether it's 5, 7, 8, 10, 12 yards in space, He's actually pretty good. He ranked, I believe, inside the top 15 in those equations. He's a pretty good pass defender, if you will, for lack of a better description, for a linebacker. So, you know, listen, McCagnan wanted to trade him. He was just trying to, the former GM of the Jets, he was just hoping to get a fifth-round pick. And, you know, what Adam Gase is saying, I just want him out of the building. The word on the street is, had a horrendous relationship with his teammates. Was not even like where a couple of guys didn't like him. He was universally disliked in the locker room for a multitude of reasons. So Adam Gase has to establish a new culture. He didn't draft him. He ain't keeping him. Get rid of him. Now, from the Chiefs' perspective, if he's deployed properly, you know, nickel and dime packages in certain spots here, I think it'll be a pretty decent asset. Now, will they retain him for that fifth-year option, give him the big money? The answer is no, I don't think. You know, Darren Lee is a functional player in certain spaces and certain spots, but not what he was supposed to be. I get it from the Jets' point of view, and I get it from Kansas City's point of view.
So as we talked about the Jets getting rid of Mike McCagnan, word on the street is that NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah is being considered for the position.
Yep.
That after Mike Mayock made the successful jump from NFL Network
We don't know if it's successful yet.
Correct.
Easy.
Made the jump. And he's seemed to make a nice jump over. We don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
He's made some savvy moves. He got the Antonio Brown deal done.
But that was old Gruden. Come on. That was John Gruden was the AB.
John Gruden was the one who wanted it, but
John Gruden made that happen.
But Mayock is the one who made the deal happen.
I think Mayock was more in the draft. But anyway, I'm not saying Mike's not good. I'm just saying let's see what happens with the guys he drafted.
And the Jets owner, Chris Johnson, spoke about the move and why he did it.
I finally came to it in the last few days, and I made the decision that I want to find a better fit for this building. I want to find somebody who, just looking forward, you know, not talking about Mike here. I want a great strategic thinker.
A strategic thinker? How is your GM not a strategic thinker? Yikes.
I do. I mean, listen. I thought Woody Johnson was bad. I thought Woody Johnson was bad, and he was. Chris Johnson might be worse. What a clueless situation. Listen, here's what I said yesterday. Mike McCagnan is about or equated to about a C-minus GM. Anybody can spend money like a drunken sailor, and Le'Veon Bell's a beast, but they overpaid for him a little bit, but that's okay because it helps Sam Darnold's development. Fine with that. Darnold's on a rookie contract. You can afford to pay C.J. Mosley maybe 10% above market value as they did, and Anthony Barr as they tried before he relented and went back to the Minnesota Vikings. Don't tell me about free agency. Anybody can spend money. How do you draft? This guy was horrendous, Mike McCagnan. Horrendous. You know, Jamal Adams fell into his lap. Quinnen Williams fell into his lap. And Leonard Williams fell into everybody who's good literally fell into his lap. The only, and it's a big thing, the only thing he did great was swapping a pick, you know, jumping up a spot to get Darnold, who's terrific. Hackenberg was a second-round pick. Bryce Petty from Baylor, fourth-round pick. Darren Lee, first-round pick. I mean, multitude of failures. So, McCagnan wasn't good, so I have no problem with that. But Chris Johnson, he just doesn't have a commanding, like, the wind blows, he shifts, and don't lie to us. Just treat us like adults, you know. You don't have to qualify when you say something about a general personality trait. Stop qualifying, I don't mean it about Mike McCagnan, because you do. Because if you didn't mean it, you wouldn't have fired him, all right? So I'm actually less incensed about this, believe it or not, than most Jets fans, because most of the GM's work is over right now. Draft is done. Free agency's done. Whatever. So find the GM that will work in cohesion with Adam Gase, and they will. And if it's Jeremiah, I'll give him a chance, just like I gave McCagnan a chance, and just like I gave John Idzik a chance, and just like I gave everybody a chance. I mean, every single GM, I give a chance until I have to start ripping you. So, you know, McCagnan wasn't good. Now, what else do you want me to say? He was not a good GM. Whatever. Peace out.
That was Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
He's got to go back to scouting the college game, which is what he was, well, theoretically pretty good at, because it didn't necessarily translate into the war room on draft night. McCagnan wasn't ready to be a GM. Sorry. All right, coming up here on Tiki and Tierney, could Zion be thawing on his distaste for the Crescent City? We'll get to that coming up. Well, NBA, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.